really appreciate it.
All right.
Now, just for safety purposes, put the other laptop up.
Testing, testing. Today is March 18th, 2010. This is the Commission on Ethics.
You got 4 o'clock, Doctor? Ronnie, how are you?
3:59.
Okay. Got a little bit of time? Thank you. Good seeing me. How are you? I'm well, thank you. Thank you. All right, fantastic.
That's the doctor's. It's really the lawyer's case with the weight of the evidence. Manny, how do you pronounce your last name?
Farach.
Farach. Farach.
Gotta come here to see you. I can't even go.
Yeah, right. Well, we gotta do. I'll do better than that. As I told people, you know, it's all right to call one another up and say hello, how are you? That's not
fine. We're in the same building.
You guys haven't, exactly. You haven't been walking around not speaking to one another, have you?
It's just not about this.
We see each other in the lunch room, we go, can't talk to you.
See, as long as I call him Manny, it's okay. When I call him Commissioner, it's when we cross the line.
Okay.
So you just have to be careful. Hi, Robin.
Hi.
Are you still in that house? Yeah, I had to cancel it because the judge called me.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to begin our meeting. It's a meeting of the Commission on Ethics. I'll ask Clerk to please take the role of the commissioners who are here.
Samuel Farash.
Here.
Dr. Robin Fiore.
Present.
Ronald Harkinson.
Here.
Bruce Reinhardt.
Present.
And Judge Edward Rogers.
Here. Okay, first on the agenda is the background. Everybody has an agenda, and before we get started with that, as you take a look through the agendas there, I had Mrs. Yen to pass out some copies in which we try to consolidate the applicants as much as possible by listing those who got the most votes. We don't have to follow that procedure, but it's certainly better than getting down to talking about 50 people. So hopefully today, if you get a chance to peep at those and form an opinion, maybe before we leave here today, I hope to be able to decide just how many people we're going to have at the next meeting to choose the applicants and how much time we're going to need and where we're going to have it and just a few housekeeping things like that. All right, Mr. Merriman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners, and good afternoon. Again, we, our second meeting. The next item on the agenda is a discussion of the a general discussion of the background and creation of the Commission on Ethics. And Mr. Baker was going to present that, so I would respectfully request that we table that until he arrives and talk a little bit about before we get into the actual process. And turning this over to Leilani to walk us through the selection of the candidates for interview, to have Mr. Berger go through some of the highlights, if you will, of the position and how it was envisioned in the ordinance and what the primary roles and responsibilities and things of that nature. And certainly some of the commission members may have some comments and some input on that as well before we actually start discussing the potential candidates. And Mr. Baker arrives just at the moment of truth.
Hey, do you want to rethink your position?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Baker, you're our background person, and you're going to
hold for as long as I could, David.
Thank you very much.
He's just getting ready to do a little dance.
Yeah.
Well, he's quite a performer, so I think you would have benefited from his entertainment.
Okay, we'll ask Mr. Baker to let us know when he's through, and rather than interrupt him for questions, if anybody has any questions to ask.
That'd be ideal, Judge Rogers. My presentation's not too long, and really, I thought it would be better that there be questions rather than just tell you what I think. This is all as background to the creation of the Commission on Ethics and the Office of the Inspector General by the County Commission. The Palm Beach County Ethics Initiative, of which I am part, but which also consists of the Economic Council, the Business Forum, the Voters Coalition, and Leadership Palm Beach County, began working on a draft of changes to the Palm Beach County Charter that would be in the form of charter amendments to put on the ballot in November of 2010. And we started that process in the fall of 2008. The values or principles that that effort began with were really threefold. The first was the creation of an independent Inspector General and Ethics Committee. The second was the creation of transparency, or greater transparency, I should say, in the conduct of county government. And the improvement of the ethics code to make it a stronger ethics code even than the state has mandated. The grand jury later confirmed our values or principles in its report of May 21st, 2009. The initiative has stuck by those principles throughout the process, the first phase of which was the adoption by the County Commission of the ordinances, the three ordinances relating to the Inspector General, the Commission on Ethics, and the Stronger Ethics Code. These principles, and I must tell you that these principles were supported by the county senior staff who worked closely with us in the development of the ordinances and who we worked closely with in the development of the ordinances, and by the County Commission when they adopted the ordinances. And just to give you a little background on the independence and transparency parts of this process, the independence that we believe that has been created is, with respect to the Inspector General, the broad power and authority of the Inspector General, the selection and retention by an independent group that, of course, is you in the case of the Executive Director of the commission, and the five of you plus the state's attorney and the public defender in the appointment of the Inspector General, the selection and retention by an independent group or by independent groups, a dedicated source of funding, subpoena power, a complaint hotline, and much more. And the more is detailed in the ordinance creating the Inspector General and the Ethics Commission. The transparency, we believe, has been enhanced by an enhanced website, which has a section specifically dedicated to ethics, but also is being enhanced to place more of the reports and information about the county, which would include audit reports, reports of the Inspector General that are not investigations, or at least not completed investigations, and other county information. Also, transparency has been assisted by more comprehensive lobbying requirements, which are detailed in the ordinance that creates the Code of Ethics, a clearer gift reporting requirements and gift prohibitions, a clear prohibition of communication between bidders and the county during the procurement process, and an independent commission to enforce these rules, which, of course, is your committee. The ordinances require the commission, the executive director, and the inspector general to have skills beyond those of the ordinary citizen of Palm Beach County. Those two are set out in the ordinances very clearly in the ordinance for the inspector general, less clearly in the ordinance for the creation of the executive director, but I will tell you what we feel are those guidelines for the appointment of the executive director. The commission, of course, consists of, as you know, but it's worth repeating because it influences the independence and the skill set of this commission. a former law enforcement official with experience in investigating white-collar crimes and public corruption, an attorney with experience in the ethics regulation and public officials and employees, a faculty member who teaches at an institution of higher education and has taught courses in professional and legal ethics or published and performed services in the field of professional and legal ethics, a CPA with at least 5 years' experience as a certified public accountant with forensic audit experience, and a former elected official with for a governmental entity in Palm Beach County. Actually, in some of those cases, we got two bangs for the same buck. The executive director that you'll be choosing must be one who can assist the commission in rendering advisory opinions, in enforcing the lobbying ordinance, and in reviewing, investigating, hearing, and deciding ethics complaints filed with the commission. The inspector general must be experienced in law enforcement, the judiciary, and or auditing, have handled complex investigations, can work with others who are performing similar tasks, for example, the state's attorney or the lead law enforcement officers in the county, can manage others. It's got to be able to run an office because he or she's going to have a rather big office, and have certain professional certifications that are set forth in the ordinance. The one of the traits that runs through all of these, all of you and all of the people that you will be selecting for your appointed positions is independence. And when we're talking about independence, we're talking about not being influenced by others in their fact-finding or fact or decision-making, and independence of those who are subject to the investigations or hearings of the groups that are being appointed or enforced, and of the Board of County Commissioners, independence of the county staff, and independence by anyone elected or employed by any entity that the Inspector General has jurisdiction over, or that the Ethics Commission has jurisdiction over. So that's kind of the background of how the county's staff and the Ethics Initiative came to the agreement on the ordinances that created these boards, or this board and the selection committee, and also created the Office of Inspector General and created the Strong Ethics Code. And I'll be glad to answer any questions that you
have. Questions from the commission. I have one, Mr. Baker. Does the ordinance make any allowance for appellate rights, or do you go through the same procedure as any other?
It would
you
be...
You just do a writ of something for the county court?
That's correct. There is no specific appellate provision.
Appeals from your orders would go by a writ of certiorari
to the
appellate
court.
Division of circuit court, like any other administrative
circuit
tribunal.
Circuit court or county court?
Circuit.
Circuit. Okay. Any other questions? Yeah. I think the next time we amend, or when you amend the ordinance, perhaps it should state in there that appeals for people who feel as though they've been mistreated to go by writ of certiorari to the circuit court.
Judge Rogers, I do want to make sure that everyone understands that the Ethics Initiative is with this as long as the ordinances exist. We intend to stay together as an organization and continue to be available to help the commission as need be, and to work with county staff and others that may become subject to the ordinance.
Let's hope that one day we will reach the pinnacle of integrity that we won't need it.
Well, wouldn't that be wonderful? I don't think anybody else has achieved it, but it's certainly an effort for all of us to try.
All right, sir. Mr. Merriman, you want to add to that?
Absolutely not. If you're ready to move on to the next item, I think.
I'd just like to have a more general discussion of the position we're here to talk about today, and that is the executive director. As I reviewed the 40 applications no less than three times and four to five times in some cases. I thought it would have been helpful to have a little discussion about the job description itself beyond what the county has so aptly provided. I'd like your feedback on the nature of the day-to-day and activities of that job, just to know what skill sets really are the ones that we should be looking hard at. I've made my own list, but before we get into specific applications, I'd like to hear some discussion on that point.
Also, I have some questions about some of the things that we're looking at as well before we get to particular individuals.
Right. Okay, Mr. Merriman.
Judge, if I may, Lenny has volunteered to give us a briefing on as it relates to the ordinance and what the intent was and drafting.
It might answer some of your questions before we get going. Also, it's Section 17 of the Commission on Ethics Ordinance is the appellate procedures. It's in there.
Okay, good.
So what we're... What we're left with is the ordinance and our imaginations, I suppose. But the but starting with the ordinances, there are probably five broad duties that the executive director is going to be dealing with. The first one, right out of the ordinance, is the executive director will probably be the one in charge of drafting the advisory opinions. Remember, the commission will be fielding questions from folks who are covered by this code of ethics to determine whether the facts that they have, you know, peculiar to them applies to a particular provision of the code. The way we envision it, or at least I had envisioned it, is the executive director and staff would be preparing drafts for you all to approve at a public hearing. So the first thing that the executive director would have, skill that this person would have to have, of course, is be able to write very well, have an excellent understanding of the code of ethics, and be able to apply the facts of a particular person to the code and do it in a consistent and in a fair way. Now, the second responsibility is this: your group, the Commission on Ethics, is in charge of developing and delivering training programs. Now, down the road, we have anticipated the group arranging with other entities maybe to provide training. But along the way, this person, this executive director and staff, will either be trying to select the right entity or even developing some materials on their own. You know, we've done our best over the years doing this sort of thing. There are obviously more professional groups who can do a much better job than we have, and they're out there. And one of the things this person will have to do is select, tailor, and deliver it in a coordinated way, not only to the county, but also to entities that deal with the county on a day-to-day basis, vendors, and the like. The third issue is enforcement, and this is a key one, obviously. The executive director reviews the initial complaints that come in to make sure that they are minimally sufficient to go forward, okay? And then we'll investigate, or hopefully down the road when there's sufficient budget, hire investigators to do that work. And then the executive director, or what we call in the ordinance an advocate, will be bringing the case before you. Now, again, in the interest of cost cutting, if the person you select as executive director is an attorney, that person can be the advocate. So that'd be the person who works up the case and then essentially acts as a prosecutor. Yes.
May I just clarify?
Yes.
I was under the impression the inspector general would be supervising the investigators. But it sounds like you're thinking the executive director will be doing that.
There's actually parallel courses that are going on here. The inspector general will be doing an awful lot of things that will never get to you at all, because a lot of the subjects of his investigations won't necessarily even be ethics violations of the code of ethics.
Or her.
I'm sorry.
All right. I'm an old HR guy.
Sorry.
I keep them straight.
So there will be now what. What I've at least envisioned, and certainly as this is rolling out in the next year or two, is sharing among the two entities, at least investigators, if that is palatable to both entities, just again because of the costs associated with this undertaking.
Lenny, sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead. Sure.
I, to follow up on Ms. Fiore's comment, can you explain the differences between the two? Because I was under the same impression as she was, that this would be, the advocacy would be done more by the Inspector General as opposed to the Executive Director, which I saw as more, mm-hmm. not to belittle it, but more of an administrative role as opposed to an investigatory slash adjudicatory slash advocacy role.
Well, the Inspector General will be in the same building, but will really do something that's largely separate and apart from what you all are doing. This person will be auditing and investigating financial records, all the transactional activities that go on, and then publishing reports. And that's it.
If they don't handle complaints from the citizens.
Well, they will handle complaints and use, if it is appropriate for this person, if the complaint is, I think that somebody's change order is really out of line, then the Inspector General will be dealing with it. If, in fact, it turns out that whatever the Inspector General sees, either through the hotline or through some other investigation, really has, as part of it, a problem with the Code of Ethics, then the Inspector General will refer it to the Executive Director and you.
I'm looking at what I understand to be the way the State Commission on Ethics works. It might not be correct, but that they do a preliminary investigation to determine probable cause before it then goes on to
correct.
A full investigation,
correct.
Which that commission sanctions. Does that describe the distinction you're making at all?
Well, it's really the distinction. The Inspector General really lives in a different world. And again, if there is an ethics issue, a code of ethics problem, because remember, most of what you all will be doing, the code of ethics, to put it in its simplest form, is preventing a public official from using the public job for some kind of private benefit. The Inspector General's authority is a lot broader than that, okay? It will be dealing with waste, mismanagement, inefficiencies, a lot of things that really won't touch and concern the Ethics Commission. It's when the Inspector General comes upon something that would be actionable by you all that it goes to the that it would go to the Executive Director of the Ethics Commission.
And okay. To whom will the Inspector General report?
Well, really nobody. Although to the the selection committee is an entity that hires the person and would be involved with the removal process should that ever come to pass, and would also be the entity that renews the contracts on four-year intervals. Independence was the key, more so than accountability, as these ordinances took shape.
High on my appraisal list was integrity, because we don't have anybody that has all of these features. And we basically have a blank palette here, a board, that we can do what we want to do. It's new for us. And we're going to have to make some adjustments because this is a new boutique committee designed for us, and it's up to us to do the things that we want to do. And I would strongly suggest that the commission and the board would have control over the Inspector General.
Well,
if we hire him or her, I'm being careful, and we're responsible for firing him or her, then I can't see how that either one could be true without us having some accountability for that person.
You're talking about that in terms of the selection, you plus the two, in terms
right.
of the selection committee. Well, I will tell you this much, okay, that the way it's set up now, that is not how it works. You, as a group, among your many duties and responsibilities and privileges, is to recommend changes to these ordinances, to the Board of Finance.
I think to that end, although we need to know enough about what we're doing to get a start, but I certainly hope
right.
that after we get the start, we have the specialists like Mr. Reinhart and the people from the state of Florida and Ethics Division, and in Miami-Dade, where they've already done it, to come in and mm-hmm. tell us about the big mistakes they made so that we can avoid that, and we will develop our procedure as we go along for those things that we need to make changes on.
Well, I'm sorry. I think what you described in terms of the hiring and firing process could probably most aptly be described as leverage as opposed to control. I think in the interest of public trust and integrity, I think it ought to be, in my opinion, at this stage anyway, hands off for the most part as you've designed it thus far.
I understand what you're saying, Mr. Berger. I understand the balance between having a non-elected commission such as ourselves, in effect, try to control a person who is supposed to be completely independent. Independence is what was sought. My question was more along the lines of how are the executive director and the inspector general going to operate, if at all, because that may be one of the qualities that, you know, I'm speaking physical space, budgets, mm-hmm. Daily interaction, because as we go through today's process of picking an ED, I need to know in the back of my mind how that's going to work. And I understand the IG is going to be out there somewhere doing their thing, but I presume that he or she is not going to be doing their thing by themselves, unless I misunderstood. I understood
where
at some point.
Where are they on your organizational chart?
The inspector general is off to the side.
Who evaluates the inspector general?
Todd.
You have the ability to initiate removal as a selection committee, as does the governments that are subject to the authority of it. It is a removal for cause and a rather tedious process to ensure independence.